Our democracy is hanging by a thread, but we know it's not about just winning and losing each battle. It's about persistence and building resilience.
That's why we're launching the Practivist Pod, the practice of activism made practical.
If you're looking for ways to get engaged or just for ways to stay sane, we want to help you navigate what comes next.
It's an exciting collaboration with political dynamo Jess Craven, author of the Chop Wood, Carry Water newsletter,
and grassroots activist Steve Pearson, host of the How We Win podcast.
Every week on the Practivist Pod, we're going to have important conversations with changemakers, give you practical ways to make an impact, have some fun, and inspire hope.
This is more than a podcast. It's a place for our community to grow our practice of advocacy for justice, equity, and progress.
Action is the best antidote for anxiety. So subscribe to the Practivist Pod today.
I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Our press secretary gave alternative facts to that.
My goal in this deposition was to be truthful, but not particularly helpful.
Welcome to Unspun, the podcast that makes you better at finding the truth. The way people get news is changing. It used to be that there were many reporters who would research stories and write articles, but now politicians and famous people share information directly with you on social media and the internet. That means you find out things fast, but it's up to you to make sure the information's actually accurate. And newsmakers don't always do their part. The temptation to manipulate information is strong. They bend the truth to deceive so that they can avoid accountability, so that they can advance their agendas. When you recognize these agendas, you can sometimes find out what's real. And we're at a crossroads where anyone can share anything online, so it's important to sharpen your critical thinking skills. Finding that deception before it goes viral is pretty much a survival skill now, and we're gonna do it together. Let's get unspun. Hello, Truth Seekers, and welcome to this week's Unspun. I've been thinking a lot this week about boundaries in a couple of ways. Boundaries are divisions, of course, and we have ideas around them, like saying good fences make good neighbors, and ideas about big giant issues like national borders. In fact, a lot of what we do when we are together is negotiate the boundaries of our interactions with each other. So, for example, it's really common when a group of children starts a new venture together, perhaps a club or a new school year. They'll begin with agreeing on a set of boundaries for how they will treat each other. And adults have boundaries too, from agreements with your neighbor on when your dog can bark outside, all the way up to a city's laws. And we take some of these boundaries so seriously that we might hire police to enforce them and put people who cross them in jail. Another thing I've been thinking about is testing boundaries. And in this week's episode, I want to talk about a specific way of testing boundaries that results in them shifting entirely. It's a trick newsmakers use, and the media has a role in letting them, and it kind of works. So I hope that sounds good, and let's get unspun. In early February of 2019, new Congressman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez stood with Senator Ed Markey to announce a bold idea called the Green New Deal. It was named after President Franklin Roosevelt's famous New Deal from the 1930s, and this plan aimed to change how America deals with climate change.
Today is the day that we truly embark on a comprehensive agenda of economic, social, and racial justice in the United States of America. That's what this agenda is all about. Because climate change and our environmental challenges are one of the biggest existential threats to our way of life, not just as a nation, but as a world.
When it was first announced, many people thought it was extreme. In February of that year, Fox News host Tucker Carlson called it reckless and absurd, and the next day, the Wall Street Journal labeled it economic fantasy. But pretty quickly, the national conversation about climate change did begin to shift. The next month, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell scheduled a Senate vote on the Green New Deal, not to pass it, but to show that it was too radical. But this move made the idea even more well known. And by April, big media channels were regularly talking about major climate plans. MSNBC host Chris Hayes said the Green New Deal, despite critics calling it a socialist fantasy, had clearly changed the political conversation. And even conservative media like the National Review, which had at first ignored and criticized the plan, began discussing climate policy seriously throughout the year. And so, you know, that showed that even opponents were now joining a conversation they had previously considered too radical. I feel like this change is a clear example of what's called the Overton window. This idea was created by Joseph Overton in the 1990s, and it describes how certain ideas become politically acceptable over time. Overton worked at a think tank in Michigan and explained that advocacy groups and think tanks could shift public opinion, making once extreme ideas become mainstream. Now, the Green New Deal was supported by progressive groups and by politicians like Ocasio-Cortez and Markey. It proposed spending trillions of dollars over 10 years on climate projects, but it would create millions of new jobs and promote economic fairness. Early news coverage was divided, with many wondering if it was realistic and if it could get political support. But as the media continued to discuss it, even critically, it moved from a radical idea to something everyone was talking about. Politicians who had avoided discussing climate change now had to address it, even if they disagreed. Social media influencers also participated and spread the conversation pretty quickly and pretty widely. And as more mainstream politicians talked about climate action, the Overton window moved even further, making these previously extreme ideas seem more reasonable. Although the Green New Deal isn't the law, it really has changed the national conversation. It's opened the door for other climate proposals, and it's made ambitious climate action seem possible or even necessary. And this story shows how quickly ideas once thought too radical can become mainstream. It also highlights the important role media plays in shaping political discussions and moving ideas from radical to realistic. So let's dig into the Overton window. It really starts with the idea of testing boundaries. If you've had or been around little kids, you probably know what this is like, right? You tell Mary not to mess with John's Legos because it upsets him. And 3 minutes later, there's a wail from the living room and you walk in to see Mary with just one finger touching John's Legos, smirking. And if Mary's a future attorney, perhaps she'll argue you into a corner about whether she can step on a Lego that falls to the floor. Can she even look at the Legos? So, you know, fences built in good faith from both sides can make good neighbors. But sometimes when you're dealing in bad faith, people just want to see what they can get away with. And if you shift things little by little, you can eventually get what you want. The Overton window concept is the range of ideas that politicians will support, politically acceptable ones, we could call them, which are generally based on public opinion. It's a way to understand how ideas about government policies change over time and affect what politicians are willing to support. Here's an example. The story of alcohol prohibition in the United States shows the Overton window in action. In the early 20th century, people worried about public health and morality formed a successful movement because they highlighted the negative impacts of drinking. Now, there were some existing social factors at the time, like the start of an influential public health initiative and a strong role that the church had in society. And so that did help move public opinion toward the idea of banning alcohol, which is called temperance. These efforts gradually shifted the public opinion and normalized the prohibition of alcoholic beverages as a legitimate and maybe even a good policy. And this policy did fit inside the Overton window. And what I mean by this is that politicians believed that these ideas were so popular that it was okay to make and enforce anti-alcohol laws. Time went on, though, and it became obvious that prohibition had some serious social and economic problems, you know, illegal alcohol sales run by organized crime, for example. And maybe it's because ignoring the government when it came to alcohol seemed to work, but the idea that you could just ignore parts of the law you disagreed with really became widespread, and public opinion went south because people started thinking prohibition was ineffective and had harmful side effects. So changing societal values began to push prohibition out of acceptability and out of the Overton window. And today, no one really talks about prohibition as a real option, so you would not see a policymaker talking about it anymore either. So you can think of it like a range of ideas on any topic, from ones that mean less government in control to those that mean more. At any point in time, only some ideas are what people generally think is acceptable. Those are the ones inside the Overton window, and politicians will only support policies within that boundary because that's what lets them win elections. I need to take a quick break. I'll be right back.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Welcome back. There are different views on how exactly the Overton window shifts. Some people suggest that groups like think tanks and organized campaigns can actively work to shift the window, making previously unacceptable ideas more mainstream. Others argue that politicians mostly react to shifts in public opinion rather than initiating them, and that it's actually deeper social changes that drive movement. But in any case, the prevailing public opinion is related to policy choices, and that public opinion can change. Now, how fast can this happen? It really depends on what the topic is, how people react, and how much the media covers it. It can really be pretty quick, sometimes even just days or months. So for example, in 2019, in Christchurch, New Zealand, there was a really tragic mass shooting where 51 people were killed at two mosques. Almost immediately, the conversation around gun control dramatically shifted in this country, which was previously known for pretty relaxed gun laws. You know, before it happened, politicians really didn't talk about strict gun control measures in mainstream New Zealand politics, but within days of the shooting, the Prime Minister announced sweeping changes, including an immediate ban on military-style semi-automatic weapons and on assault rifles. Before the Christchurch attack, comprehensive gun control reforms were viewed as politically extreme, so people didn't really engage with them. But this event, combined with really widespread public shock and super intense media coverage, shifted that public opinion and political willingness towards strong gun legislation, and it happened in a hurry. But it can also take a really long time, maybe years or even generations, as societal values and norms slowly evolve. And I think of the pandemic with that. In late 2020, mRNA vaccine seemed like a truly great thing that was going to get us out of a huge threat in what was, for a medical innovation, a blindingly short period of time. But look at where we are now. Multiple states have considered bills banning the vaccines entirely. And, you know, I wonder, will the Make America Healthy Again movement succeed in shifting public opinion enough that U.S. lawmakers actually ban vaccination? I guess time will tell. Ultimately, the speed at which the Overton window shifts depends on some interrelated factors, like major events that capture public attention, the intensity of the media coverage, what the existing social values were, and the effects that various influencers make. And the media, as one of those influencers, it has a big role to play here. It's not always even an intentional one. And there are a couple of media theories that help explain why. First, there's agenda setting. This is the process by which the media chooses what to cover and whether they put it at the top of the page of the newscast. And this can influence what the public considers important. When they focus on certain topics, the media can make them seem more important to the public, potentially making it more important for policymakers to act on them. The media choosing to cover an issue makes it seem important. And in some cases, the public will react and will show up and yell at a council meeting, for example, or stage a protest. And then maybe the media cover that. And soon, the issue seems like it is something that is very necessary for politicians to have an opinion or act on. Framing is another media theory, and here, the media presents information in a specific way, using specific language or highlighting particular parts of an issue. And this can influence how the public understands and reacts to that issue, maybe changing their views on related policies. For example, the same protest could be described as, angry protesters blocked traffic downtown yesterday, disrupting businesses and causing delays for commuters. Police monitored the situation as tensions rose. Or it could be described as, citizens exercised their right to assemble downtown yesterday, drawing attention to important issues. Police maintained a presence as the peaceful demonstration unfolded. Both descriptions could be factually accurate, even if they're talking about the same thing, but they frame the event differently. News outlets also post editorials and commentary, and they give endorsements, and all of these, research suggests, can influence voting behavior and public opinion. There's more. Repeatedly hearing certain ideas or narratives in the media can make them seem normal, a concept that's central to the Overton window. Even if a media outlet isn't explicitly advocating for a previously fringe idea, consistently including it in discussions or comparing other ideas to it can make it seem just less extreme over time. You'll see this sometimes when media pull out a fringe view in the name of balance in coverage. Sometimes media outlets are actively trying to influence public discourse and policy debates in line with their own perspectives and goals. Here's an example. In the early 1990s, Diana Mutz and Joe Soss conducted a journalism and public opinion study in Madison, Wisconsin. One of Madison's two daily newspapers selected low-income housing as one of 10 issues to champion throughout the year, and they announced this agenda with a full-page statement on January 1st, Business Day. Mutz and Soss observed editorial meetings and worked with newspaper staff who shared plans before the public announcement. They designed a year-long study to measure how much the newspaper influenced public opinion. And the newspaper advocated for requiring low-income units in new housing developments through editorials, and they also encouraged their reporters to do related stories. They intended to build community support for this position through consistent coverage, and the researchers checked if it worked. They did phone surveys with more than 1,600 residents at four intervals before the campaign began and three times during the year. And the results showed that readers' personal opinions about low-income housing actually stayed the same throughout the campaign. Readers didn't report any increased personal concern about the issue, but readers increasingly perceived their community as supporting low-income housing requirements, while readers who read a competing newspaper perceived declining support. So the newspaper's sort of efforts and publication of this kind of thing changed perceptions of others' opinions rather than the reader's own views. And this finding matters because the newspaper didn't change, you know, support for housing and increase it, but it did succeed in changing how people thought about public opinion. And it's that thinking about public opinion that influences policymakers' decisions. So news may influence politics not by changing individual opinions, but by reshaping what people think that other people think. One key way media outlets can affect the Overton window is by bringing attention to ideas that are kind of out there. When the news consistently highlights certain topics, it makes people aware of those ideas and can get people talking. And furthermore, news outlets can frame topics in a way that can reshape how the public perceives issues. So when the news chooses the language, context, and emphasis used when presenting information, this can take previously unacceptable ideas and make them seem more reasonable or even essential. One thing I thought about with this was the notion of arming classroom teachers as a way of managing the gun violence threat in American schools. This was an idea that was brought up by a few politicians, and the media legitimized the discussion by doing analyses and bringing in experts to talk about if guns in the classroom would be helpful or harmful. What might have been a really unpopular idea at first starts to look at something that's worth a good hard look. And this is especially useful for more ideological media outlets, which can work together with newsmakers to use the media ability to normalize ideas as a way of getting the public to accept it as normal. And as I imagine you can see, this relates to how newsmakers can use a kind of propaganda feedback system to legitimize their ideas. When you have a blurred line between news and news commentary, like I talked about a few weeks ago, you can get your more radical ideas in an outlet that has news in the name, even if it is commentary, and then you can then refer to that coverage as evidence that your idea is popular and normal. Politicians do this, advocacy groups do this too. And the traditional media are not alone, because researchers have also suggested that social media influencers can potentially shift the Overton window, sometimes with kind of different impacts. Now, you, I'm sure, know that social media platforms have become major players in the modern information ecosystem. So platforms like Truth and X and Facebook, they allow information to spread rapidly and seamlessly, and this includes misleading information, false information, propaganda. This kind of spread can make a difference. And when it comes to tightly knit communities on platforms like Reddit and 4chan, it further complicates things because their users can create and validate to each other in their group the most ridiculous of alternative facts, and research shows that information that's generated there does migrate to other more mainstream social networks. And this suggests that ideas originating from less conventional sources online can gain traction and even sort of move the Overton window, reaching people, most people, who primarily get their news through social media. You know, it's really cheap to share information on social media, which lets alternative news sources gain traction with large audiences quickly. So things that in the past would have died in the fringes of the marketplace of ideas can take root and bloom. And the speed at which information, including hoaxes and lies, can spread on social media is sometimes within hours. And, you know, studies have shown that smaller fringe communities like the Donald and Paul on Reddit contribute a notable portion of both mainstream and alternative news URLs posted on Twitter. And that really just highlights how these alternative online spaces shape conversation and eventually change policies. And so we're in an age where influencers are getting invited into the White House and into the briefing room. And it's important to realize that social media influencers operate in a more kind of decentralized way, and they're often less gatekept, which means they can directly engage with their audiences, and those audiences can spread the messages virally through sharing, and this just bypasses media filters. Information influencers share also codes as more reliable for a lot of audiences, so this can make the view of acceptable public opinion evolve pretty quickly. I think it's important, though, to realize that this could be a good thing sometimes. Social media has lowered the barriers for people with marginalized voices, and that means the traditional gatekeepers of information like news media no longer hold all the cards. So folks who had historically been excluded can tell their stories, and that can change the public understanding, and this does happen. You can see studies of how Twitter users appear to be more actively sharing alternative news compared to mainstream sources, and that suggests that users are willing to amplify perspectives that might shift the window of appropriate discussion. I want to just add in here as an aside that I know that Twitter is not a reliable social network now, but it is a well-studied one, and this is because the API that used to work with Twitter was really easy for researchers to get data from, so a lot of them chose to study Twitter just because it was easy to get that data. Okay, anyway, we have to wonder though, since the popular narrative drives policy and it's not that hard to manipulate, is there anything we can do about that? People often don't realize when their opinions are being shaped by shifts in the Overton window. And this is because the change often happens slowly, making it hard to notice. As the media repeats ideas, they start to seem normal, even if they once seemed extreme. So people don't have to believe a radical idea right away. They just have to hear it often enough to begin comparing it to other ideas. The media shapes a big role in public opinion. News outlets decide which stories to highlight and how to present them, and this affects what people think is important. And this can shift the Overton window without people realizing it. Studies show that the media can focus heavily on some issues like abortion rights while downplaying others like family policies, and this can distort a public's perception of a movement's real priorities. Research also shows that it's hard to recognize when media is persuading people, making it even harder for the public to notice when their views are being manipulated. Another reason people miss these shifts is what's called the third-person effect. This means that people tend to think that the media influences other people more than it influences themselves. And also, some ideas get ignored by the media, which just keeps them out of the public debate entirely. Because, you know, with so many media sources today, it's even harder to track what is shaping opinions. Sometimes people do notice shifts in the Overton window. If a once unthinkable idea starts to sound normal, that can be a sign. A more media-savvy public that's trained to spot bias is better at recognizing these shifts. And as the Overton window itself becomes a better-known concept, more people may pay attention to how their views are being shaped. Media literacy helps you to spot when the Overton window is being shifted on purpose. One important skill is checking who owns or funds a media outlet. Knowing a source's agenda helps reveal its bias, and knowing that groups test ideas before they become mainstream can help people question where these new ideas are coming from. People should also pay attention to agenda setting and framing, those theories we talked about before. If an idea that was previously ignored is suddenly getting constant, positive media attention, that can be an intentional push to bring it into the Overton window. And likewise, when issues are ignored or they're framed negatively, they may be being intentionally kept out. Studies show that selective coverage can change how people see a movement's goals. It also helps to recognize patterns of repeated messaging. Hearing extreme ideas over and over can make them seem less shocking, and recognizing when the same phrases or narratives or talking points are showing up across different media can help you see when ideas are being normalized. Skepticism and cross-checking information from different sources is also important, because relying on just one news outlet makes it a lot easier to miss shifts in the Overton window. Comparing coverage from different perspectives reveals differences in framing, and it can highlight those efforts to produce certain narratives. Understanding the Overton window itself is a key media literacy skill. If you just know that the range of acceptable policies changes over time, this can make you more aware of shifts and help you analyze the media through this lens. Recognizing that policies do exist on a whole spectrum of accountability can just help you be more thoughtful about political discussions. So, truth seekers, we can add changing the definition of normal to our assortment of tricks newsmakers use to get their ideas enacted. And as always, stay sharp out there. Thanks for getting Unspun with me this week. Unspun is a production of me, Amanda Sturgill, and is a proud member of the MSW Media family of podcasts. Send me your thoughts and ideas about trickery in the news on Gmail at theunspunpodcast@gmail.com. I even write back. And find this episode's show notes and more information at theunspunpodcast.substack.com. Want to learn more and get smarter? Check out my book, Detecting Deception, Tools to Fight Fake News, which is available on Amazon or your favorite online bookseller.
And until next time, stay sharp, everyone.
I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyal from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-Roe anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.